Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Clan and family, Mike Pence and the sons. Steve Bannon is Darth Vader. They all end up walking out and singing this song. And it's sort of a nod to the Saturday Night Live edition after the election when Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton sang that same song. And it was so touching and it was so powerful and it was so spot on perfect that night. So then at the end of the season, sort of bookending Saturday Night Live in this all-important year, if you will, they go back to Alec Baldwin singing that with the lyrics changed, and I didn't think it worked. The audience was laughing. I didn't think it was that funny, and I almost thought it was sort of, if not disrespectful to Cohen, I thought it was sort of disrespectful to what they accomplished the first time they did it. But maybe you don't agree. James Poniewozik is the media critic at the New York Times. He joins us now to talk a little bit about this season that was. James, you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
That's my monologue about the use of that song. What did you think?
Well, here's the thing. I kind of agree with you that it felt like kind of a flat ending to a season that has gotten a lot of attention. I'd probably disagree with you a bit on the first use of Hallelujah, which was maybe polarizing. I sort of felt it was very powerful in the moment. I'm sure that, Kate McKinnon totally felt that performance and there was a lot of genuine emotion behind it. I have to say it bothered me somewhat simply because, Saturday Night Live, and this obviously was a reaction to the end of the election and the election of Donald Trump. Saturday Night Live was, in some ways, as much as they've made fun of Donald Trump, sort of instrumental in elevating and promoting Donald Trump. He had hosted the show a year before that, almost exactly, right? While a candidate for the Republican nomination, which was almost unprecedented, it seemed a little odd, in the light of that, to then react to his election as though, you're kicking off a telethon after an asteroid hit the Earth. It was. I will say, very affecting, but there was, there was this background to it that kind of unsettled me.
Okay, but I hadn't thought about it in those terms. Wait a minute, but go back to Donald Trump as a candidate. I remember when he was on SNL as the candidate. I didn't remember it being all that unprecedented, but I guess it was. I didn't think it was all that funny either, because it's hard to make fun of Donald Trump since he's the zenith of himself. You really almost can't parody the guy. But you think it's a little disingenuous almost, huh? Is that what you're telling me, for them to then criticize him later?
Not so much to criticize him later, but to open a show in this, very sort of mournful. I mean, seriously, it was like, it was literally, what is the message of that if not, we are marking a national tragedy? If you honestly believe that, that is absolutely, you're right. And I don't think it's like wrong of Saturday Night Live to take that tone. But, considering they had at least some role in that.
That's funny. But you think that, but you're telling me that you think SNL's role in Donald Trump's ascendancy was helpful, that they actually helped get him elected rather than pointed out. I mean, because you have to weigh against that all of the absurdities of the man that they pointed out as well.
Oh, sure. It's a little bit of everything for them. And obviously, Saturday Night Live will make fun of any, I'm certainly not saying they were operating as an unregistered super PAC for him.
But
giving him, this tremendous amount of free media at what was at that point a crucial point in the run-up to the primaries, and at a time when a lot of other people were giving him free media as well, was, it's hard to say that they didn't have some role in lifting him. And again, it's not even, you know, that was like over a year ago. I don't want to totally relitigate that. I would just say that that kind of I guess that was why the holiday performance, as sincerely meant as it may have been, didn't sit that well with me.
That's really interesting. I think that's a double-edged sword that none of us have quite figured out yet. When you point out all of the absurdities, my word, of Donald Trump, are you helping him or hurting him? And when you put him on Saturday Night Live and mock him, you also humanize him. You give him a chance to laugh at himself. Ultimately, that's good for your brand. So I suppose, in net, that was a good night for Donald Trump, for sure. It wasn't a great night for Saturday Night Live. But then fast forward to he's now the president, and they've just had this season. And I think a question then and now remains, what should the job of Saturday Night Live be? Because clearly from Kate McKinnon's singing Hallelujah as Hillary Clinton, it was, we don't want Donald Trump. You're right. This is a day of mourning. This sucks. We don't like this guy. And now we're going to make fun of him and just bash him for the next season. That's what it felt like to me. Not comedy for comedy's sake, but rather comedy for an agenda's sake. What do you think of that, James?
I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. I mean, not an agenda.
Do you agree with that? I mean,
I would say, honestly, I don't know if you're talking about like the episode immediately after the election when Kate McKinnon saying Hallelujah. I'm not sure that Saturday Night Live at that point necessarily knew what their approach was going to be.
Right.
But I would say when you say, you know, what's sort of the role of a comedy show, you know, it's first obviously to be funny, you know, which is to say, you know, to promote, you know, a reaction from people to get them to laugh, to make people feel strong feelings. It is not necessarily to be even-handed, to poke in all directions equally. Like, they don't have, like, any moral obligation. A comedian has an obligation professionally to have a point of view. Having a point of view often means that, you know, you're not always making fun equally in all directions. Depending on what your point of view is, you may happen to find that at this juncture in history, Donald Trump is, from your standpoint, being more ridiculous than any other public figure, and you're going to make more fun of him. Not everybody may agree with that, but, you know, I think comedy designed to have everybody agree with it is generally not going to be very good comedy. So I would say, you know, I think you're probably not going to make very good comedy if you say your objective is to have a certain real world effect, right? To, like, you know, make people vote a certain way or take down a certain politician or whatever. But you will make, hopefully, good comedy if you have a strong point of view, if you have something to say and you say it in a clever way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes having something to say means you're going to be coming at it from a certain, you know, political point of view.
Well, so if nothing else, there's no harm, Saturday Night Live is saying, in us undermining his presidency each week. They're sure not trying to buttress it, right? They're not trying to help Donald
Trump. I think that, you know, clearly, I mean, I honestly think before the election, they kind of went back and forth on how hard they were going to go against any particular candidate. I don't know if you remember, but they did a final episode with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump running through the streets of New York, and it was sort of this like kumbaya, you know, we all like each other when it comes down to it, and we're not going to tell you how to vote, but hasn't this been a crazy season, and, you know, let's settle it with a handshake or whatever. Afterwards, they went much more into, okay, this is, you know, confounding, you know, bizarre time in politics, and we're going to lean into, you know, to mocking Trump and the administration. And I think that that election gave Saturday Night Live more of a point of view than it had. I mean, the results of the election gave them more of a clarifying point of view than they had before the election.
Well, yeah. And look at the ratings. I mean, this was a banner year for Saturday Night Live. So while the president said they're not funny and it's a loser network and it's a loser show, people really flocked to the show this year. I wonder, would you say for some catharsis or what?
I'm sure catharsis is an element of it. I think that just generally in entertainment, maybe to an extent that's surprised me as an observer of it, people are really seeking out, people are just focused on politics and the administration and political affairs right now more intensely than they have been often in the past. I mean, you see this, in Stephen Colbert's ratings and a lot of, late night shows ratings and the effects on cable news ratings, where I might have thought that at this point people would just want an escape,
right,
and, go to, sort of apolitical entertainment like Jimmy Fallon. Instead, they're tending to turn more to shows that are leaning straight into it.
Yeah, no kidding.
And Donald Trump will be the first to tell you he's good for a lot of people's ratings.
Melissa McCarthy as Sean Spicer was a hit. Alec Baldwin, this may be the role of his career as Donald Trump. You got to admit they're both really good at that. There were times, though, where I thought, and again, this is just me maybe belaboring the point. I'll let it go now. But I do think they are so anti-Trump that there are times where while they're really good at saying something bad about the president or his staff, it's not so funny, and it's almost too mean. The parody spot they did, well, when they did a Broadway send-up with, Chicago was the show that they parodied Kellyanne Conway is performing in, and then they did a cologne ad for her. They just did the scene.
That was the Ivanka, was it Complicity? Complicity by Ivanka.
But there was also, what was the name of the show, Elif, that Glenn Close was in, Steve? I just asked you.
Oh, you're talking about the fatal attraction.
The fatal attraction thing I thought was beyond the pale. I thought that was a terrible skit,
That got a little ugly. I mean, it's the sort of thing that I can see in it. I can see the idea behind it, where it's not, I feel like the idea behind that was not so much to, be sort of personally spiteful toward Kellyanne Conway so much as saying this relationship between cable news networks and the flacks that they put on the air is this weird kind of psychotic codependence. But in practice, it was it really came off kind of uncomfortably ugly. I agree.
That was somebody's mom lying on the ground there that they were pretending had died and then come back to life. I just thought they crossed a line.
Having said that, I think that Kay McKinnon's Kellyanne Conway had been, one of the high points of their election coverage before then.
Yep.
You mentioned earlier how it's tough to totally, to figure out a way to mock Donald Trump directly when he's such an outsized figure and such a performer and a celebrity in himself, which I think is a problem for a lot of people who do. And that's why I've actually felt that on Saturday Night Live, a lot of the best political stuff they've done this season has been spoofing the stuff around Donald Trump and around the election. And, people like Kellyanne Conway and, Melissa McCarthy's Sean Spicer, I would say more than Alec Baldwin's Donald Trump, has been the single great creation, sort of great comic character creation on Saturday Night Live this season. Absolutely.
People love
just
that.
Because, it instantly defined him as a public figure. And to me, a great Saturday Night Live is not just an imitation. It's not just about sounding or looking exactly like a person. It's having an idea of them and creating a character and creating it so, you saw this with Tina Fey and Sarah Palin, or maybe Will Ferrell's George W. Bush or Chevy Chase's Gerald Ford. That character is so well conceived, it kind of starts to take the place of the actual person in your mind. And I think Melissa McCarthy did that immediately.
That's so true. James Poniewozik writes, of course, about the media for the New York Times, and a little conversation here about Saturday Night Live's season, having just closed out with some of the best ratings and singing once again, Alleluia. James, thanks for joining us this afternoon. It's nice to read you. It's nice to talk to you, too.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
For some reason, I'm now real cautious about the use of the word historic and historical. So when the Cubs played the Giants last year or in the past, and it was famous and important, would you call those historic or were those historical? Bertrand, your thoughts. Go.
I would say it was an historic series.
Historic series. Yes. What would a historical series be?
Historical documents, so something that explains. I don't know. I don't know the difference.
Okay, I think I do, but I may be wrong because a lot of times I am. But here's what I think a historical series would be. It would be the Cubs versus the Peloponnesians. It would be the Cubs versus the ancient Romans. Historical means a really long time ago. That was historical. Historic just means famous, so you could have a few years ago played an historic series, but for it to also be historical would have to have been a long time ago.
Okay, I can refine your definition.
Okay.
Historical has to do with something in the past.
Yeah.
Historic has to do with something that stands out from the past,
past. I think that's right.
Well, we did it together, my friend.
Because,
right, everything that happened is historical. But if it's an historic event, it's something
right.
that stands out in history.
And when Betsy DeVos became Education Secretary and she was speaking about Donald Trump's presidency, she described it as historical. And then people got bent and snarky and media elite smarty pants-ish about it. And so here I am now just trying to straddle that line. But I don't think Donald Trump's presidency is historical.
Not yet.
No. I mean, hundreds of years from now, they'll go, wow, remember the Donald Trump, blah, blah, blah.
Well, but
right now, it's historic.
It is an historic election, yes.
And I think it's a historic election, not an historic.
It's an, actually.
Really? You think so?
I do. You be Merriam, I'll be Webster, okay?
I hope they're enjoying this conversation about grammar. People love grammar talk on the radio.
Thanks to James Poniewozik from the New York Times about this season's Saturday Night Live skits and sketches and ratings and how they did. It was the best ratings they've had in years and years and years. And it really was go-to TV. You couldn't wait for the cold open. Something would happen during the week, and you'd say, ooh, I wonder what they're going to do on SNL. And then you'd get your payoff. You'd get that itch scratched, and you'd laugh at it. And I felt it was helpful to those who are angst-riddled this season, this election so far. But that's only one half of the country. The other half either didn't like it or liked it a little bit but didn't have the same itch that maybe the people that didn't vote for the president had. But I also thought that they were so clearly partisan that while it was very funny, I thought it sort of morphed into something different this year. Not just political sketches, but also a show that wants to take this president down. And I think that's different than what they've been all along. I don't know that Mr. Poniewozik agreed with me on that completely.
Those are your words, Mr. Thrush.
Talking to Kim a minute ago about the basketball game last night. Did you see the Celtics and the Cavaliers at all?
No, but it was nice to see the Celtics answer.
Yeah, no kidding. In Cleveland. You know, they got embarrassed. That was the greatest rout in the history of the playoffs, at least in the first half. I don't remember if the final score was. Game two in Boston, it was just embarrassing. That's the Celtics. And I know that Cleveland is like on another plane, but come on, guys. So then when they go to Cleveland, you think, this thing isn't even going to be entertaining. And they kept it close. And then son of a gun, they caught them and they won. And it was such an entertaining game. Look, this whole NBA playoff series, Steve, the entire NBA playoffs has just been everybody waiting for the rematch between Golden State and Cleveland. And seven games are too long. And I've been saying that all along. But that was a good game three.
Golden State advances tonight, right?
Yeah, well, I guess so. You never know. But, yeah, I've got Golden State winning it all in five, by the way. But, boy, that was a fun game to watch last night.
I'll take Golden State in three.
Good, you do that. So here's the headline. Billy Bush breaks his silence on Trump, the Access Hollywood tape, NBC, and a comeback plan. This is an interview he gave Hollywood Reporter. This is the first time he's spoken since last October. And in part, their interview with him begins this way. Billy Bush, this is how he finds out. This is how Billy Bush finds out that his world will forever be different. He's on the tarmac at New York's JFK International Airport, waiting to take off for Los Angeles. So he's got the long flight. When his world implodes, it was Friday, October 7th, 2016, and an 11-year-old tape of a lewd conversation with Donald Trump in which the then-apprentice star could be heard bragging about sexually assaulting women with a chortling Bush egging him on, was leaked to the Washington Post. The tape was supposed to end Trump's improbable presidential run. Instead, it torpedoed Bush's job at NBC's Today. Captive on that plane for nearly six Wi-Fi-enabled hours, Bush read news reports in disbelief as a real-time train wreck engulfed his career. I don't know if I would have watched. I don't know if I got Wi-Fi. I would have read a couple stories and went, wow, this is going to go badly for me. I think I would have just signaled for the drink cart and turned my computer off. But he just kept reading for 6 hours in that seat. I'll bet it was first class, but still, can you imagine? By the time he arrived in Los Angeles, a horde of paparazzi had materialized at LAX. Bush spent the remainder of that October weekend desperately trying to save his job, then just a few months old, and already off to a shaky start after a much-criticized interview with embattled Olympic swimmer Ryan Lochte. Do you remember that?
Yeah, was it...
He was propping him up. That's when Lochte was in trouble, and he sort of gave him a pass.
And Matt Lauer sort of called him on it
on the air.
Yes,
exactly. It got very awkward very quickly, and that was, I didn't remember, but Billy Bush just getting started in his role on Today. Initially, NBC News signaled Bush would return that Monday to apologize. The opportunity never came. Where has Bush been since? Engaged in a lot of soul-searching. A process that included time walking on fiery coals with spiritual guru Tony Robbins. Billy, look.
Okay, he's had enough punishment.
Bring him back. Don't go there. Really. Because, you know, I'll finish this paragraph, but if you think about it, he just simply lacked the courage or the charisma to call Bush, to call Trump on his rhetoric.
Have you ever been in that situation?
Many times.
Right.
I mean, many
times. When you're meeting people or celebrities and or authorities, and they say things
that you would, or just in a private company of friends, where they'll say something that's mildly racist. Was it racist? Should I call him out on that? Oh, I'm just gonna. Let this moment pass. You know, have you ever been in that situation? Of course you have. And do we all step up and do the right thing?
Yeah, I'm not.
Mostly we don't.
I'm not a Billy Bush fan, but it's even different in what I was describing in professional situations.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know, he couldn't. He was trying to interview Trump.
Right.
You know, to call him out and say, you know.
Hey, back off, fella.
Right.
That's way to
wrong.
Talk about a woman.
He's not in a position to do that.
It just wasn't. I mean,
you don't giggle either.
Well,
I mean,
he was in a position.
I'm not defending him. But.
Hold on. But he was in a position to do that. But he didn't. And I don't think that makes him that much. Right, Steve? I don't think that makes him that much different than a lot of us.
Right. So then Trump gets off the bus and Billy Bush loses the interview because he stood up to him. You know, then he's in professional trouble that way, too.
Right. Yeah, if they say, hey, where's this Trump interview? He goes, well, I called him out for saying stupid stuff that was never going to be broadcast anyway. Yeah, right. How does that play out for him?
Again, not defending him.
In real time. What, Aleph?
I think that it's when you're in a tough position like that, the best thing to do is just not to react. And
well,
just.
If he had said nothing, if he hadn't laughed or said really, kind of egged him on.
Well, he could have said, really?
Put it that way.
You know, no laughter.
Perfectly straddled the line between that may be funny or that may be critical.
Someone's going to have to tell Elif she's way too mature for this show.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that bus anyway. But now he's walking fiery coals with Tony Robbins trying to get his life back. And I know his career is over as he once knew it, but this soul-searching strikes me as being just a little too soul-searching.
Well, he did say, too, right, that his 15-year-old daughter called him in tears and said, how could you not say something when Donald Trump was talking that way?
I'll get to that. Let me finish this paragraph.
No.
You're absolutely right. Included time. So he's on the coals with Tony Robbins, which you're right, Steve. It's punishment enough. He does a stint at a Napa Valley healing retreat. He took up yoga and meditation. He developed a boxing routine and read books like 10% Happier, written by ABC News anchor and buddy Dan Harris. Bush, the nephew of George H.W. Bush, also spent more time than he had in years with his family, including his daughters Lily, 12, Mary, 16, and Josie, 18. It was fun to have his undivided attention, says his older brother Jonathan. There was no rushing off to do this or that. I'll skip to what it was like when he had to talk to his daughters. They asked, "You have three daughters. How do you explain all of this to them?" Billy Bush says, "My then 15-year-old Mary called me from boarding school, and she was in tears. Dad, Dad, Dad." And I said, "Everything is going to be fine, Mary. Everything's going to be okay." And she said, "No. Why were you laughing at the things he was saying on that bus, Dad? They weren't funny." And it hit really hard, Billy Bush says. And I stopped for a second. And I said, "I have no answer for that that's any good. I'm really sorry." That was Dad in a bad moment a long time ago. "You know me. I'm really sorry that you had to hear and see that. And I love you." She needed to hear that, he said. And I certainly needed to tell her that. This is funny. So he's got two other daughters, the 12-year-old and the 18-year-old. He said the little one is 12, and she's made the decision not to ever watch the Donald Trump tape. Fair enough. He says, "My 18-year-old is more of a fighter. She was like, 'All right, who do we need to take out?'" Wouldn't you want one of all of those? One to call you on your ethical lapse, one to say, "Dad, I'm behind you 100%. Who do we need to punch?" And the other one to say, "I love you. I'm never going to go there anyway." By the way, the 12-year-old probably will someday. But for now, that was like the entire spectrum, maybe, of responses you could ask for from your kids. And at least he got all of that. This is from The Hollywood Reporter in the Billy Bush interview, the first word that he's spoken since his career ended after being on that Access Hollywood bus. I want to read a little more from this. You may want to comment, too. You can text or call to 312-981-7200. On WGN, the question is, if you were in a position to put him back on a TV show now, would you? On WGN, we're just reading through the Hollywood Reporter piece about Billy Bush. 7.5 months later, still doesn't have work, but is finally at least talking a little bit about it. So crushed was he that he actually spent time with Tony Robbins walking on hot coals. He said he's working on a new project, one that will feature interviews, sports, pop culture. It sounds a little Entertainment Tonight or Access Hollywood-ish, but he says he's a different person. This is interesting. He said that while he is not grateful for the moment, he says, "I'm grateful for what I've gotten out of it. I'm not grateful for the moment. I'm grateful for what I got out of it." Boy, that's good. He longs to be what Bush refrained from doing is watching. Yeah, he has not himself watched the infamous 3-minute tape from 2005. While he has long been aware of its existence, he says plenty of people at NBC knew about it too. He says that he still does not know who leaked it, and the president has not called him or spoken to him since. David, you're on WGN. Hi, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Thanks for having me. I was listening to your comment or your question about should he be allowed back on the air, and it made me think about just our own local sort of media celebrities. And Amy Jacobson, who's on another station, was one of the, I think, best. And I'm not a friend of hers. I'm not a family member. I'm just a fan of Chicago journalism. But she was a great journalist for Channel 5, and she made one mistake and has become the Pete Rose of kind of Chicago journalism, right? She can't get back on TV. And what Bush did was arguably worse, and it's easy to take a couple months off and sit with PR people and write a statement, but, you know, I'll be the first one to say free Amy Jacobson before you let that guy back on the air.
That's an interesting point. Thanks for the phone call, David.
Hey, thank you.
Amy was on with us a couple of weeks ago. She sort of felt, well, I don't want to speak out of school here because she's on another radio station. We were talking about the fact that she's not on TV anymore. But she did say something about how much she has enjoyed the time with her family and that she is happy to have her career where it is now, recentered, as it were. I think that's what she said. Didn't she say something like that, Steve? Do you recall that?
I think she did say something like that, yes.
John, that was locker room banter. Everything said was typical and not a big deal. So whatever even made it such a big deal should worry about the starving kids in Africa. I'm a female. Just keep it moving. Okay. By the way, I've been in plenty of locker rooms over my life, not many of them lately, but I played sports in high school and college. That was not typical locker room banter. It was stupid guy banter that some stupid guys engage in, but it was not typical in my male experience. John, we let Clinton run for president after she lied furiously about Benghazi and her secret email server. So what's the big deal? Boy, some people are never going to let that go. I don't even think we're talking about that. Hey, Tom, you're on the air. What did you want to say? Hi.
Well, initially I wanted to say that he got a fairly decent payout because he had just been moved to New York from a really nice home in L.A.
Yeah, I heard it was $1 million. It was
his whole family, and then he had to reverse the whole process. But he got a fairly decent cash payout.
So. Yeah, I can move back for seven figures. He got a seven-figure buyout.
Right. Well, and you know probably more than most of us, the numbers, when you get promoted to a show like today, is probably a fairly decent salary.
Oh, yeah, right. And remember, he was the 9 o'clock co-anchor. I mean, I don't know what that pays, but it's millions. It's millions.
And I just wonder, to your question about whether he'll get back in, no, because it was Trump. I'd like to think that if it was a beloved Democrat that had done something like that, how Hollywood have reacted.
Right. So if that was Joe Biden saying something inappropriate, or I don't know who, but I'm trying to think of who, Al Sharpton.
Oh, God, no.
I'm trying to think of some of the, because those words just would not have, I cannot imagine a scenario where Barack Obama is caught saying something like that, and Joe Biden for that matter. But yeah, if that had been a Democrat, would the story have changed? I'm terrible at those kind of questions, Tom. I don't know the answer to that.
You can't answer that because Donald Trump is not a Republican. He's a unique entity, right? I mean, you could do Anthony Weiner.
I guess, yeah. Well, yeah, but I don't even see this through the lens of Republican or Democrat.
No, that's what I'm trying to say. He's an extraordinary sort of, he's an uber thing. He's not Paul Ryan, and he's not, you know, Joe Biden or anyone else like that. He's something, he's unique.
Yeah, yeah. John, I agree with you. That was not typical locker room banter. John, whenever I'm in a situation like someone putting down a race or religion or nationality, I speak up. Billy Bush should have spoken up. Well, you at 760, I think, are the exception to the rule.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Here comes one right now. Watch. Mm-hmm. 210. WGN, this is John Williams. So far, so good. The president's trip. We'll visit with an ABC reporter in Jerusalem who is following how the president's trip is going and what he's saying and what he's not saying and stuff like that there. But so far, so good. The headline scroll today is Trump, Netanyahu, heap praise, I presume, on one another. But about that, somebody said this, and this is a text that has just poured in. It says, hey, John, maybe you or Steve can help me understand. Why is President Trump saying he never brought up Israel to the Russians, but now is saying this to the world? I never heard anything about Israel. Isn't it worse for him to say this now? I don't know. I don't understand. What's happening here? This is a kind of a story that, Steve, you were dragging down the hall with me earlier today.
Oh, right. So when the president gave this information to the Russians, it was described as code word secret, right? You had to have a code word. It was beyond top secret. And this was information that reporting said was shared by an ally that the U.S. was told they couldn't even share with other allies and certainly not everyone within their government. That's secret. Well, the president gave it to the Russians by most accounts. I think even the White House has agreed that that is the case, that he mentioned some of this. And then subsequent reporting said, well, this information came from Israel. So it could well be that the U.S.-Israeli relationship will be damaged if Israel gives the U.S. information and then the president just gives it to the Russians without asking permission.
Right.
That came later. Well, the president today said, hey, I never said it came from the Israelis in the meeting.
I never uttered the word Israel in that meeting.
In the meeting. And no one had ever reported, well, maybe someone did, but the reporting was never that he said, hey, I got this from Israel, or hey, can you believe what the Israelis gave me?
Right.
So he's denying something of which,
for which he was never accused,
ever.
Well, H.R. McMaster said, famously, that he didn't know where he got that information. That is, whatever information the president has, the president himself did not know where it came from.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So he couldn't have said it came from Israel.
Presumably.
So
and nobody ever said that he did.
No one ever accused him of telling him that. So today he's sort of refuting the story by saying he never did something that he was never said to have done.
But in the process, he's now telling the world that the media got it wrong again.
Again,
when in fact, the media did not get it wrong. he's denying something that the media never said existed to begin with.
Right. He's creating a story and saying yes. The media got wrong a story that didn't exist.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I don't know what led to it. This was like in a spray, you know, he was standing with Netanyahu.
Yeah.
I don't know if he must have been asked a question specifically, but, you know, it just goes to, again, he in a way continued the story by answering a question badly.
Yeah.
You know, he might have said, we've gone over that, or I'm not going to address that here. Instead, he said, I never said that.
Well, you know, these sprays, these spontaneous conversations that you have where you go off script are so difficult, and particularly when you're doing it internationally. So there he was in Israel. I believe it was in Israel where he used Islamic terrorist or extremist. And they were very careful which of these words he would use, Islamic, extremist, terrorist, Muslim, in what order they would use them. Lord knows he made hay for that on the campaign trail. And then he, in fact, himself muffed it. He used a phrase that they did not intend to use. His team immediately attributed that to exhaustion. They said, my God, the guy's been flying internationally, and some of those words were juxtaposed inappropriately. I totally give him a pass on that. Of course, it's a delicate topic, and the vocabulary is very particular, and he's been careless with his words at times, as many of us have been. So I'm not getting real bent out of shape of that. There's so many little things that you can go to in this trip if you want to. You could spend time talking about Ivanka and Melania not wearing headscarves when the president himself criticized former First Lady Michelle Obama for not wearing a headscarf in that part of the world. That's fair, that's legit, but it's not really that important. When the president was getting a medal from the king of Saudi Arabia, he bowed down a little bit to get it over his head, but in the process ended up, if you will, bowing down to a foreign king. Exactly what he criticized President Obama for once upon a time doing. I'm not getting bent out of shape about that. I watched the video a lot, and I'm not sure if he was bowing to a foreign dignitary to be courteous, like, you know, none of us Americans know what to do here. Do we give a little head nod? Or was it just him getting the dang medal on his neck and he had to bow down a little bit?
And you know the answer to that is?
Uh-uh.
Neither one matters.
I hope you understand that's the point I'm trying to make.
Right. And so the real point is that the criticism of it when it was to Obama was
fair
petty
enough.
And ridiculous.
Fair enough. But I think but now to even the score.
Yeah, well, that's
say,
right.
That's the other side being petty and ridiculous.
Right. I agree.
If you really want to just
except
be petty.
That happened.
If you really want to be petty and ridiculous, watch him and Tillerson do that sword dance in Saudi Arabia, you know, where you're all kind of linked arms together and you're trotting left, you're trotting right, and it's really weird. It's one of these customs you can't believe adult men are doing in the world, and now there you are with your suit and tie doing it badly.
I guess other presidents have refused to do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's a man-only thing, or the women aren't allowed or something. But
a lot of, you know,
but you know what? You go to different parts of the world, you got to do different things.
Evidently. And so you're sitting there going, is this awkward or what? Is this appropriate or what?
Now, touching the orb of death...
Right. There are some things maybe I know not to do.
That's a staff thing, man. Someone, I don't care if you're going to fire someone over leaks or not. You got to fire someone who told you to touch that orb.
Wait, which orb are you talking about?
When they lit up or start open the, have you not seen that?
No, I have not.
Oh my gosh. You have to find it. It was in Saudi Arabia.
Are we now going down the road of being petty when we shouldn't be?
No. Okay. Well, yeah, there's no legitimate criticism, but it was a terrible optic. So he's standing with the Saudi king and President al-Sisi, the three of them.
Yeah.
And they're around what looks like this giant fortune teller crystal ball. And they're opening up an anti-terrorism center. And by doing what they do is they put their hand on it and it lights up.
Uh-huh.
And, oh, I can't believe you haven't seen this.
Well, but I mean, so what's so bad about that?
It looks like they're the evil empire around this weird, or others said they were the witches of Macbeth.
No kidding,
oh,
really.
It was a sort of thing that a Michael Deaver never would have put Ronald Reagan in that situation.
It's a 216. A reporter from ABC in Jerusalem catches us up with the more important part of this trip next on WGN. Jordana Miller, ABC News correspondent, joins us now from Jerusalem, not to talk about that, unless she wants to, but rather to catch us up on how the trip is going. Jordana, this is John Williams. You are on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Hi, Sean. I'm doing good. It's been a long day, but a very interesting one.
The line sounds great. I'm John, just for your information. But so tell us a little bit about your travels, the president's, and what's been happening today.
Well, the president arrived at about 12:45 here local time, and he was greeted very warmly by the Israeli prime minister. Really, both of these leaders really lavishing a lot of praise on one another. You can tell there's a very strong sense of intimacy, comfortable, relaxed kind of vibe between them, which may sound trivial to say, but remember, after many years with President Obama, there were so many tense, awkward moments that everyone here is really noticing just how relaxed and comfortable these leaders are with each other. The president flew straight to Jerusalem, where he met with the Israeli president, and they both gave remarks there. The president there speaking about Iran, saying that, you know, that Iran is really a destructive force in the region, and that Israel and the United States, or that the United States is committed with Israel to really thwart Iran. And he made, the president made a call to, called out to Iran to really stop arming and equipping and training militias for Israel. Very important. They wanted the United States to take a stronger stand against Iran's support of terror, not just the nuclear deal, which they also opposed. And then the president met with the Israeli prime minister a little bit later today, briefly. He made a very controversial stop at the Western Wall, where he became the first sitting president to actually visit that spot. It's a spot that sits in East Jerusalem. Israel claims sovereignty for over all of Jerusalem, but of course the United States and the rest of the world sees Jerusalem as contested. So this is a very controversial move, but he was there. He put a note, a prayer note in the wall. He was accompanied by his daughter Ivanka and his son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner. And then this evening there was a press conference with the prime minister, the Israeli prime minister. And this was probably President Trump's strongest pitch for the need to really take advantage of what he called a rare opportunity to build peace and security and stability in this region. And we see the president really pivoting to a regional deal now, speaking about, you know, asking Israel to embrace regional Arab partners. He, of course, just came from Saudi Arabia. But we can see that the old days of Oslo, where the peace process was all about Israelis and Palestinians, that is rapidly fading now. The new model, it seems to be, will be to include Arab partners in this and try to cut some kind of larger, wider regional deal. It will not be easy. There will be many difficulties, but it seems to be that's the direction the president is heading in.
ABC News' Jordana Miller is in Jerusalem. Was it always planned for him to visit the Western Wall?
We had been hearing unofficial reports that he was going to stop there, and then we heard that it was definitely happening. So it was in the works for a little while. There was intense security there. There were cameras in every alleyway of the old city because he wanted to walk for a few blocks until he got to the actual plaza. And, you know, he was also visited the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, one of Christianity's holiest sites, and a place where the tomb of Jesus has just gone through an incredible renovation. So they spent some time there as well.
No talk about moving the embassy?
U.S. officials seem to have told Israelis before this trip that there will be no announcement of an embassy move, not now, possibly later, but it's looking very likely now that the president will sign that waiver on June 1st. It seemed that, you know, the president has such a determination to try to get these peace talks relaunched, and moving the embassy to Jerusalem really might have torpedoed that entire effort. So it seems that if the president's going to do this at all, he's certainly going to wait.
Jordan, I don't know if you have much to say about this, but here people are scratching their head a little bit about the Stephen Miller speech he gave about radical Islam, since it's so at odds with what he had said when he was in the United States. Maybe it's best that he did say the things he did there rather than take a hard line. But how is his speech being received in that part of the world?
Well, the prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, actually applauded him for the speech that he gave in Riyadh, saying it showed a lot of conviction and a lot of clarity, and that You know, he applauded the call to Muslim leaders to take more responsibility in fighting terror and to drive terrorists out of communities, out of houses of worship. So here in Jerusalem, the message that the president sent to the Muslim world was very much appreciated, and they were watching that speech very closely.
You know, and so everybody now online, if you're clicking around, you see myriad instances where he said only the harshest and most exclusionary things about Islam. But there's no point in going down that road there. Maybe that's what you say to get elected, but then when you have to govern, you have to take a more moderate tone, particularly in that part of the world. His message sounded inclusive, right?
Absolutely. I mean, to hear him say, you know, to, you know, dozens of Muslim leaders, you know, we're not here to tell you how to live or how to worship. This was an inclusive message. You know, the home of the birthplace of Islam was one of his stops along the way. I think the president really wanting to send a message of unity among people, that there really has to be a pull to come together to fight, you know, the forces of what he called evil,
yeah,
barbarism, which are perpetrating terror. And that was part of his stop at the Western Wall today. Nothing political, but to say, you know, this is, we're honoring this tradition, and, you know, soon he'll be off to Rome, honor.
Yeah, so, you know, and so far, tradition. So good. I mean, I think a lot of us, when he got on that airplane, thought, oh, man, don't screw it up, don't screw it up, don't screw it up. So far, so good, right?
Absolutely. So far, so good. So far, so good. Except perhaps maybe the off-the-cuff remarks about his denials that he ever mentioned the word Israel in the meetings with the Russians in the Oval Office. That was unscripted. You know, this denial he made in front of reporters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
At the King David Hotel. That was maybe the only thing so far that made it. I mean, I'm not sure the Israelis wanted that issue to come up in that forum.
Yeah.
In any case.
Well, and we've been talking about that here. It's kind of a head scratcher since nobody said that he did say that in the meeting with the Russians to begin with. But he hasn't
That's
been
right.
tweeting either. Does he have his phone with him? Maybe because he's out of his routine of getting up first thing in the morning and firing off tweets, you know, the time lag and all of that. Maybe he's just out of his routine. Or is it a conscious decision for him not to be tweeting this week?
Yeah, I wish I knew the answer to that question, but it is surprising that we haven't seen a lot of tweets. But he's also been on a very tight schedule. And, you know, from meeting to meeting to meeting. So that may have something to do with it. I imagine that we may still hear from him yet.
Well, if you see him, take the phone right out of his hand, Jordana. It's life in America is going so much easier without him tweeting and just complicating things. Give it to him when he gets back. But if you get a chance, and you'll probably get, you know, kicked in the shin if you do this, but just grab the phone from him, okay?
I will do my best.
Jordana, it's nice to visit with you. Well done. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. Thanks.
Jordana
Bye.
Miller from ABC News reporting from Jerusalem. Thank you, Stephen. Thanks to Jordana Miller again from ABC News in Jerusalem telling us about the president's trip and concurring with my observation that so far, so good. Not many foibles. You can find little nitpicky things to pick on if you want, like the way they danced or put their hands on the orb of death. The optics of that are just too hilarious. In an internet age, you can't make a visual mistake like that.
You know, Twitter puts out these moments where they'll put out a series of top tweets, and the ones around that are just, well, they're funny, but it just was, I mean, it was a bad idea.
Well, but the thing, you know, but here again, say you're the advance team of the president, and they say, in Riyadh, we have a new global center to fight religious extremism. Oh, we should embrace that, and we
right.
should know about that. To be honest with you, here's the upside. We now know about it as a result of this. I mean, I'm thrilled that in Riyadh they have a center to fight religious extremism. And our president went there, and the world saw our president there. That's a home run. That's a wonderful thing. We might not have known about it were it not for this ridiculous picture. That's the weird thing about it. So then they go, okay, here's the deal. Advanced team person for Trump. We want him to tour the thing, and he can look, and it's interactive. He can hit some buttons and see where the hot spots are. But we've got this translucent globe that lights up. and it shows the waters of the earth and the land masses of the earth, and it's glowing and it's ornamental. How about if the, you know, blah, 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 blah. Are you supposed to go, you know, that'll look too much like the movie. We can't do that. I mean, it's kind of hard to know how these moments play out.
No, it's not. That's what you
need to know.
Huh?
Well, I guess if you're,
if it's your job.
I didn't even see that movie. I did not know that was a scene in a movie.
I don't know what it is. All I'm saying, if it's your job to put your president in a good optic situation,
yeah.
That's not one where you have the king of, you know, the 80-year-old king of Saudi Arabia,
yeah.
In his garb and his, you know, beard and his hallowed face and
the white,
the
yeah.
Orb lighting it up from below. And then, you know, the president of Egypt on one side and you on the other.
Okay.
It's not a good picture.
Okay, Mr. Smarty Guy.
It's not that smart.
Well, but the other guy thinks it is. The other
Who?
Guy, the guy from Riyadh, the guy who's representing the king in the white robes.
Right.
He goes, no, this is a home run, dude. And he doesn't say dude, but he says whatever they say. And now you're in an argument with the guy from one from Saudi Arabia and one from, I guess, both of them and one from Egypt. And,
right. Well,
and you're telling them no. OK,
yes.
Fine. Now we've got an international incident here.
The president will happily come and open it. We just don't think that we don't think the United States president should usurp the king's authority.
Yeah,
he should touch the orb
that's
himself.
Good. That's good. Yeah. We will stand there and honor him as he touches the glowing orb
of
death.
And someone said, I was trying to find it while you were talking there, that someone said he did it and they've talked a few times about how exhausted he is.
Oh, totally.
And that maybe he wouldn't have done it if he wasn't so tired. But I think that this is a staff thing. Like, you don't put him in that position. You know, it's just it's a terrible picture.
You know, the one image that I'd love to see the president give us that he hasn't and hasn't really ever, to my recollection, is him speaking to his wife. Him having a laugh with his wife, him opening a door for his wife, him ushering her. And I know, again, protocol is really weird in that part of the world, but every single time I see them standing together, he completely ignores her. And I just want him to, for everybody's sake and for hers, to smile, to laugh, to, you know, share just a confident something with her. But
I did see him this weekend.
If you do, send them to me. Send me links, videos, and clips because I need this, and I haven't gotten this yet.
No, I have not of this. But, you know, we've talked about how he's just not a guy. He's not a laugher.
No.
And I did see him with a genuine laugh this morning.
Okay, but
this weekend.
Okay, but what you saw was him laughing, not him.
Not with Melania.
Interacting with his wife.
No.
Who looks great, by the way. She's doing, seems to be doing everything she's supposed to be doing, you know, nodding appropriately and speaking at, she was actually, Ivanka was at a women's rights thing, and so they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. I'd just like to see a little more intimacy between the two.
People stop making fun of how she dresses because she dresses better than you.
She looks,
you know, great. I mean, I've seen a lot of that petty stuff, too. Like,
really?
The height of her belt, and it's like, come on, just relax.
She's going with the wide belt. If she's wearing a wide belt and you're not, you're wrong, okay? Then you're wrong.
I'm going to go buy one right now.
I'm totally going to get a 70s belt and some white slacks, and I'm going to wear them. One other international story, because Americans love international news.
Is this
the story about the Turkish MPs beating the U.S. protesters. So this story has advanced a little bit. When President Erdogan was in the United States, he was coming from, where was he coming from, the White House?
I believe he was coming from the White House, yeah, or the Capitol, but I think it was the White House.
And there were some protesters there who were upset with him or something in Turkey. And as they go by, his Secret Service just begin to beat and kick men and women who are there protesting. Now, they say that they were egged on, and they are filing a formal complaint, Erdogan's security detail, with the United States, saying they did not do enough to protect them from this mob.
Go to any website, Google it. You will see the security guards kicking protesters who are already on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, already beaten to the ground or fallen to the ground.
Yeah, and then they're still coming over.
They walk up to them and kick them in the head.
Yeah, they do. They totally do. And if there is video here, again, I haven't seen it. Nobody's posted the video of where they
were hurt or were offended or
put the president in such danger that they had to beat back this crowd. That just, if that exists, I haven't seen it. I've been paying attention.
So you have foreign security kicking protesters in America and exercising their First Amendment rights, and the strongest complaint about it comes from the kickers, not the government of the kickies.
That's what I said to Elif. I said, imagine if this were, you know, a U.S. governor or the president of the United States, somebody who would have a security detail, and they started to kick and beat up U.S. protesters. These are U.S. citizens they're attacking. How much money would that be worth? How much jail time would these people have to do? We just wouldn't tolerate it. But because it's a security detail from the president of Turkey, they seem to be getting away with it. Now, they say that they're actually protesting it, but I don't think a check's going to get written. And I don't think anybody's going to go to jail. Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, it's been muted at best. I mean, I'll go back to Senator John McCain, said the ambassador to Turkey should have been kicked out of our country.
Yeah, it's not too late to do that. And then that doesn't do you any good. You still got your head bashed in, and you don't have anything to show for it. But maybe that would be at least some
satisfaction. So Donald Trump's going to the Vatican next, right? So he
is going to
be over, pulling into St. Peter's Square, and the Secret Service start kicking nuns in the head.
Well, don't make them nuns.
Okay, priests.
Protesters. Some Italians
novices.
who have angry signs about America.
Right.
That's probably going to happen.
About human rights.
Right. There you go.
And the Trump forces kick them in the head.
Right, right.
And then we complain to the Pope.
Exactly.
That's what's going on here.
That is exactly what's happened. They said, well, you didn't do enough to protect the motorcade from those angry protesters. And by the way, the diplomatic corps from Turkey that are complaining about that said something about they didn't seem to get the fact that in the United States, we have the right to do that. We get to protest, and you have to deal with that, not the other way around. They didn't seem to understand that wonderful facet of life in America. What are we going to do about it now? Remains to be seen. It's 2:46. This is WGN. Joyce wanted to say something. Thanks for calling, Joyce. You're on WGN.
Hi. Yes, I am curious as to why you need to see this from Trump and his wife. I'm curious to know if you would have felt better if you had known that Bill Clinton was doing this behind Hillary's back, and what their relationship was really like. And how about JFK with all his affairs? Would that have made you feel better if you knew what was going on there?
I'm only talking about President Trump. I just think it would be nice. That's
all. Well, you're putting him. Why can't we talk about all the presidents?
Well, we can.
Why are you singling him out?
Well, Kennedy's dead and Clinton's not president, so they're not as relevant. I mean, just humor me for a second, Joyce.
You are putting him in a completely different category on its own because you don't like him.
The Clintons show affection.
Actually, they did. But yeah, I mean,
it might not have been genuine. Who knows? But you know.
Really, Joyce, just answer my question. Answer my question.
You don't know, but you don't know what their relationship is.
I don't. But I hope they do. I don't know. That's why I'm asking for just a little something. Do you agree with me that it is sometimes conspicuous?
Yeah.
Lee absent from their public persona.
You said that, John.
Yes.
Because I did see them smile at each other very sweetly and genuinely this weekend.
I didn't.
He was doing something with a little dance, which he looked really goofy doing. But
right.
He was doing some kind of a dance, and they flashed to Melania, and she gave him the sweetest smile, and they went back to Donald. And he smiled back.
He smiled at her. I'm so glad. Well, thank you for calling, Joyce. That's what I needed.
And I'm not saying I'm a Trump supporter. I just feel like you are not being fair to their relationship. We don't know.
So you're not a Trump supporter?
I'm not saying if I am or not. all I'm saying is, you know, look at what Hillary and Bill's relationship. Look what was behind those closed doors.
It was terrible. It was terrible.
It was terrible, and we don't know if it's terrible.
I don't know how that. Okay, so if I grant you that the president cheated on his wife, if that was my daughter, I would have killed him with my bare hands. But I just don't know how that's supposed to help me with my expectation for this president to act a little more chivalrous towards his wife.
Well. I suppose, I think they're apples to apples, honestly.
Okay, well, I mean, but I just don't understand it. I don't understand that. I'm conceding that Bill Clinton behaved poorly. Good grief, that train left a long time ago. Nobody's arguing that Bill Clinton's comportment towards his wife was stellar. They did at times. I mean, they had a complicated relationship. They did share more a public sort of a relationship. They did seem to like each other more, even though he famously cheated on her. All I'm saying is, would it be that difficult for this president to once in a while have a little show of affection towards his wife, a little show of civility? That's all I'm asking. Ms. Garris, I believe I'm done reading commercials and playing commercials, right? So I got 2 minutes just to sit here and look at Rokhan's yellow shirt and gaze into his piercing eyes.
Excuse me. Thank you very much. Let's just say that I'd like to say something positive.
Okay.
About the President of the United States.
Well, this will be a first.
This does not happen a lot.
Mark your calendars at home.
Yes, on this program. But I think he said thus far, with the exception of one answered question that wasn't asked.
Right.
He's had a very successful run so far.
Well, Cochran tweeted about that over the weekend, about how he's doing a good job. And I just, quote, tweeted Steve saying, yeah, but the bar's pretty low, I think. I think for a lot of us, the expectation, the hope was, just don't screw it up. Don't start a war. Don't alienate anybody. Read the speeches. Look presidential. And I don't know that that's all super easy, but he's doing it. He's doing it well.
But that's not our expectation of him, because every time we have an expectation, something like that, domestically, he lets us down. He will, you know, he does something that is unexpected goes off script or adds something that isn't there. And I think there is a sense when you watch him, and he did read the script in Saudi, and he was very, very careful about his use of language there. Everything was, you know, people who were waiting for him to say radical Islamic terrorism and all those things. And he played it so perfectly, which makes you wonder one of two things. For me, it makes me wonder, does he think we're all really stupid? The people who are, does he think his own people who he's basically saying one thing to and then doing another? Or does he believe, or is he just smart? And then those people who, you know, want him to be angry, they like that he says it, but they know that he can't say it publicly when he's over there. So they accept him. And I think that's kind of where this is. And then people who are like wanting him to be as fidelitous to the truth, as he can be, although he's, you know, I mean, look, I mean, here's a guy that ran conspiracy theories left and right, to get himself into a position. And now here he is. And it's, I think people want what they want. We learned anything in the Trump era, it's that.
Well, if you wanted him, for instance, to bust on Islam while he was over there, he didn't. And I'm glad he didn't.
Right. But I think the people who want him to bust on Islam wanted to bust on it here. Not necessarily. I don't care if he does it.
But isn't that weird? So we love it when he says that here. We love it when he doesn't say it there. So which is it? Which is the truth of him?
The truth of him is that he's a chameleon, and he's a guy who wants to get... I think what was amazing to me yesterday, and the one thing that I think why he's getting good reviews, is because he appeared to be a president of the United States, not to just be Donald Trump's celebrity.
Yeah.
And I think that people are conflicted. Some people want a president. Some people just want the celebrity. That's what it comes down to.
Do you think there's some people who are a little disappointed that he hasn't goofed up more?
Yes, for sure. The producers of this program, because we needed a lot of tape for today that we didn't get. But I think that, you know, it is interesting. You know, you were the lady you were talking to before, right before the break, about Melania Trump and whether or not, you know, they have a warm sort of relationship and all that. I mean, people are, you know, when people call up and go, what about Bill Clinton? What about JFK? Right? I mean, you could just tell that's all about politics. It's just all about politics. And there'll be people who will go, well, what about, you know, Ronald Reagan was divorced or this or that. And the unfortunate thing in America is we now see everything through this lens of left and right. We've been so well trained by both parties to just buy into both of their horse crap that we don't discern anymore a difference. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a sad commentary. But right now I can tell you this. I'm not one of those. You are not one of those. And I think the president so far has done a pretty good job on this trip, with the exception of the
I didn't say Israel. Did I say Israel? I didn't say the word. I did not. Did not say the word.
Where's Anna DeVlantis today?
She is somewhere.
She's going to join us?
Yes.
She's not walking across the street right now.
She is. Well, then something has happened. We're going to send out a search party for her because she was here just a few minutes ago.